our guests, tune into Hemispheres next week. We have, if you have comments about this or any other show on KGNU, go to KGNU, leave a comment at 303-447-9911. The time is 7 o'clock. We go to the vice presidential debate live right here on KGNU, Boulder, Denver.
What advice do you have for voters here in the United States?
I mean, what I can say is, like, get out and vote, right? Like, that is the best advice I have. You know, there are numerous issues occurring around the country where people's—
In fact, people are voting now in places like Vermont and other states. They're already voting.
Right, exactly. Early voting's already started in some states. It's starting next week in Ohio. But there is a chance, you know, like what I said about the purges, that people might go to the rolls and go to the polls and find out that their names are no longer on the rolls. Or, you know, there might be at the poll challenges in Pennsylvania. I think people have to demand provisional ballots if they find that their names aren't on the rolls, because that's the only chance that your vote's even going to count. And there's a high likelihood that, you know, when you go to the polls, if you encounter problems and if there are long lines, that people might turn away. But I think that people just really have to go out there and affirmatively say, if they're being denied their right to vote, give me a provisional ballot. And if they are able to cast a ballot, like, take advantage of whatever opportunities are available, whether they're evening, weekend hours, or election day.
Well, we're going to leave it there now, because the debate is about to begin. We want to thank you, Naila Awan, joining us, a human rights lawyer from Demos. I want to thank Chase Strangio for being with us, lawyer with the ACLU. Catherine Franke, a professor at Columbia University, a professor of law at Columbia Law School, directs the Center for Gender and Sexuality Law at Columbia University. And the title of your book, Catherine?
Thank you. Wedlocked, The Perils of Marriage Equality, another show.
We'll have you back on to discuss that. But right now, we're going to turn to the vice presidential candidates, Republican Mike Pence and Democrat Tim Kaine, just minutes away from facing off at Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia, in their first and only debate before next month's election. Pence again, the governor of Indiana, former congressman from there. Tim Kaine, the junior senator from Virginia and Virginia's former governor. He was also mayor of Richmond. Elaine Quijano of CBS News will be moderating the debate. Third-party vice presidential candidates, including Libertarian William Weld and the Green Party's Ajamu Baraka, were excluded from the debate stage under stringent rules set by the Commission on Presidential Debates, which is controlled by the Democratic and Republican parties. Tonight, we'll air the vice presidential debate live and expand the debate by giving a major third-party candidate a chance to respond to the same questions. The Green Party's Ajamu Baraka will join us live for this entire debate. The Libertarian vice presidential candidate William Weld did not respond to our invitation. Ajamu Baraka is a longtime human rights activist. He's the founding executive director of the U.S. Human Rights Network and coordinator of the U.S.-based Black Left Unity Network's Committee on International Affairs. For years, Baraka has led efforts by the U.S. Human Rights Network to challenge police brutality and racism in the United States. The debate begins now.
Sponsored by the Commission on Presidential Debates. I'm Elaine Quijano, anchor at CBSN and correspondent for CBS News. It's an honor to moderate this debate between Senator Tim Kaine and Governor Mike Pence. Both are longtime public servants who are also proud fathers of sons serving in the U.S. Marines. The campaigns have agreed to the rules of this 90-minute debate. There will be 9 different segments covering domestic and foreign policy issues. Each segment will begin with a question to both candidates, who will each have 2 minutes to answer. Then I'll ask follow-up questions to facilitate a discussion between the candidates. By coin toss, it's been determined that Senator Kaine will be first to answer the opening question. We have an enthusiastic audience tonight. They've agreed to only express that enthusiasm once at the end of the debate and right now, as we welcome Governor Mike Pence and Senator Tim Kaine.
Thank you. It's an honor.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to meet you.
Great to meet you. Thank you.
Gentlemen, welcome. It truly is a privilege to be with both of you tonight. I'd like to start with the topic of presidential leadership. 28 years ago, tomorrow night, Lloyd Benson said the vice presidential debate was not about the qualifications for the vice presidency, but about how, if tragedy should occur, the vice president has to step in without any margin for error, without time for preparation, to take over the responsibility for the biggest job in the world. What about your qualities, your skills, and your temperament equip you to step into that role at a moment's notice? Senator Kaine.
Elaine, thank you for being here tonight. Governor Pence, welcome. It is so great to be back at Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia. This is a very special place. 65 years ago, a young, courageous woman, Barbara Johns, led a walkout of her high school, Moton High School. She made history by protesting school segregation. She believed our nation was stronger together, and that walkout led to the Brown versus Board of Education decision that moved us down the path toward equality. I am so proud to be running with another strong, history-making woman, Hillary Clinton, to be President of the United States. I'm proud because her vision of stronger together, building an economy that works for all, not just those at the top, being safe in the world, not only with a strong military, but also strong alliances to battle terrorism and climate change, and also to build a community of respect, just like Barbara Johns tried to do 65 years ago. That's why I'm so proud to be her running mate. Hillary told me why she asked me to be her running mate. She said, the test of a Clinton administration will not be the signing of a bill or the passage of a bill. It'll be whether we can make somebody's life better, whether we can make a classroom better learning environment for school kids or teachers, whether we can make us safer. It's going to be about results. And she said to me, you've been a missionary and a civil rights lawyer. You've been a city councilman and mayor. You've been a lieutenant governor and governor, and now a U.S. senator. I think you will help me figure out how to govern this nation so that we always keep in mind that the success of the administration is the difference we make in people's lives. And that's what I bring to the ticket, that experience having served at all levels of government. But my primary role is to be Hillary Clinton's right-hand person and strong supporter as she puts together the most historic administration possible. And I relish that role. I'm so proud of her. I'll just say this. We trust Hillary Clinton, my wife and I, and we trust her with the most important thing in our life. We have a son deployed overseas in the Marine Corps right now. We trust Hillary Clinton as president and commander-in-chief, but the thought of Donald Trump as commander-in-chief scares us to death.
Governor Pence.
Well, first off, thank you, Elaine, and thank you to Norwood University for their wonderful hospitality. The Commission on Presidential Debates is deeply humbling for me to be here, be surrounded by my wonderful family. And Senator Kaine, it's an honor to be here with you as well. And I also want to say thanks to everyone that's looking in tonight, who understands what an enormously important time this is in the life of our nation. For the last 7.5 years, we've seen America's place in the world weakened. We've seen an economy stifled by more taxes, more regulation, a war on coal, and a failing health care reform come to be known as Obamacare. And the American people know that we need to make a change. And so I want to thank all of you for being with us tonight. I also want to thank Donald Trump for making that call and inviting us to be a part of this ticket. I have to tell you, I'm a small-town boy from a place not too different from Farmville. I grew up with a cornfield in my backyard. My grandfather had immigrated to this country when he was about my son's age. My mom and dad built everything that matters in a small town in southern Indiana. They built a family and a good name and a business, and they raised a family. And I dreamed someday of representing my hometown in Washington, D.C., but I honestly, Elaine, I never imagined I'd have the opportunity to be governor of the state that I love, let alone be sitting at a table like this, in this kind of a position. So to answer your question, I would say I would hope that if the responsibility ever fell to me in this role, that I would meet it with the way that I'm going to meet the responsibility should I be elected vice president of the United States. And that's to bring a lifetime of experience. A lifetime growing up in a small town, a lifetime where I've served in the Congress of the United States, where I've led a state that works in the great state of Indiana. And whatever other responsibilities might follow from this, I would hope, and frankly, I would pray to be able to meet that moment with that lifetime of experience.
Ajamu Baraka, you have roughly 2 minutes to make your opening statement as well.
Thank you very much, Amy. It's really an honor to have this opportunity to speak directly to the people of this country. As everyone knows, we have not had a chance to be on the stage with our presence, but we are not going to allow that to dissuade us from taking our message to the American people. You know, leadership is a very important quality, and we have not seen much of it for quite some time here in this country. I think that for myself, the kind of leadership that I would bring to this position is one that's been informed by a lifetime of experience, getting a chance to see the inner workings of the government at every level, from the outside looking in, which provides a critical perspective on the contradictions of this country and this government that claims to be a champion of human rights, that claims to represent certain kinds of values, who claims that it has some certain kinds of efficiencies, to see those contradictions and to be able to know what kinds of solutions we can create to deal with those contradictions. Look, one thing we have to do about the notion of governance here in this country is to demystify it. That basically, with the support of the people, with a sense of vision, with a sense of what is right and wrong, with an ethical framework that's different from the dominant parties and the ruling elite, we can govern ourselves, and we have the experience to, in fact, do so. So I could talk about, you know, my experience in terms of running organizations, budgets, managing people, my geopolitical understanding of the world. But what's really important is that I'm part of a movement, and part of a movement that is committed to transforming this society and transforming this world.
Back to the moderator, Elaine Quijano.
Senator Kaine, on the campaign trail, you praised Secretary Clinton's character, including her commitment to public service. Yet 60% of voters don't think she's trustworthy. Why do so many people distrust her? Is it because they have questions about her emails and the Clinton Foundation?
Elaine, let me tell you why I trust Hillary Clinton. Here's what people should look at as they look at a public servant. Do they have a passion in their life that showed up before they were in public life? And have they held on to that passion throughout their life, regardless of whether they were in office or not, succeeding or failing? Hillary Clinton has that passion. From a time as a kid in a Methodist youth group in the suburbs of Chicago, she has been focused on serving others with a special focus on empowering families and kids. As a civil rights lawyer in the South with the Children's Defense Fund, First Lady of Arkansas, and this country's Senator, Secretary of State, it's always been about putting others first. And that's a sharp contrast with Donald Trump. Donald Trump always puts himself first. He built a business career, in the words of one of his own campaign staffers, off the backs of the little guy. And as a candidate, he started his campaign with a speech where he called Mexicans rapists and criminals, and he has pursued the discredited and really outrageous lie that President Obama wasn't born in the United States. It is so painful to suggest that we go back to think about these days where an African American could not be a citizen of the United States. And I can't imagine how Governor Pence can defend the insult-driven, selfish, me-first style of Donald Trump.
Governor Pence, let me ask you. You have said Donald Trump is, quote, thoughtful, compassionate, and steady. Yet 67% of voters feel he is a risky choice. And 65% feel he does not have the right kind of temperament to be president. Why do so many Americans think Mr. Trump is simply too erratic?
Well, let me say first and foremost that, Senator, you and Hillary Clinton would know a lot about an insult-driven campaign. It really is remarkable. At a time when literally, in the wake of Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State, where she was the architect of the Obama administration's foreign policy, we see entire portions of the world, particularly the wider Middle East, literally spinning out of control. I mean, the situation we're watching hour by hour in Syria today is a result of the failed foreign policy and the weak foreign policy that Hillary Clinton helped lead in this administration and create. the newly emboldened the aggression of Russia, whether it was in Ukraine or now their heavy-handed
Russia.
Approach.
You both
their heavy-handed
said,
approach.
You both have said Vladimir Putin
well,
is a better
we're
going
to get to Russia
president.
In just a moment, but I do want to get back to the.
But in
question
the midst, in the midst, yeah, Elaine, no, thank you,
but,
thank you,
but,
thank
Elaine,
you, thank you, Senator.
These guys have praised Vladimir Putin as a great leader.
How
can they defend that,
Senator? We do have that coming up here, but in the meantime, the questions were about your running mates.
I must have hit a nerve here.
Why the disconnect?
At a time of great challenge in the life of this nation, where we've weakened America's place in the world, stifled America's economy, the campaign of Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine has been an avalanche of insults. Look, to get to your question about trustworthiness, Donald Trump has built a business through hard times and through good times. He's brought an extraordinary business acumen. He's employed tens of thousands of people in this country.
And paid few taxes and lost $1 billion a year.
But why the disconnect with your running mates?
But there's a reason why people question the trustworthiness of Hillary Clinton, and that's because they're paying attention. I mean, the reality is when she was Secretary of State, Senator, come on. She had a Clinton Foundation accepting contributions from foreign governments.
You are Donald Trump's apprentice. Let me talk about this
Senator,
issue.
Senator, I think I'm still on my time.
Well, I think isn't this a discussion?
This is our open discussion.
Senator, let's talk about this.
Well,
let me interrupt you
and finish my sentence if I can.
Finish
the Clinton Foundation accepted foreign contributions from foreign governments and foreign donors while she was Secretary
okay,
of State.
Okay, now I can weigh
she had a private
now,
no, server
I get to weigh in
that
now.
Was
Let me
discovered
just say
I did raise.
To
Senator,
keep that pay-to-play process
you have an opportunity
Governor
to
Pence,
out of the reach of
Governor
the
Pence doesn't think the world's going so well, and he is going to say it's everybody's
do
fault.
Do you?
Let me tell you this. When Hillary Clinton became Secretary of State, Governor Pence, do you know that Osama bin Laden was alive?
Yes.
Do you know that we had 175,000 troops deployed in the battlefield in Iraq and Afghanistan? Do you know that Iran was racing toward a nuclear weapon and Russia was expanding its stockpile? Under Secretary Clinton's leadership, she was part of the national team, public safety team, that went after and revived the dormant hunt against bin Laden and wiped him off the face of the earth. She worked a deal with the Russians to reduce their chemical weapons stockpile. She worked a tough negotiation with nations around the world to eliminate the Iranian nuclear weapons program without firing a shot.
Eliminate the Iranian nuclear weapons program.
Absolutely, without firing a shot. And instead of 175,000 American troops deployed overseas, we now have 15,000.
Right. And
these are very, very.
And Iraq has been overrun by ISIS. Because
well,
Hillary Clinton failed to renegotiate.
More American troops
Hillary
in Iraq,
Clinton,
you can,
Hillary
you can
Clinton,
propose that.
Right. Hillary Clinton failed to renegotiate a status
we're
of forces agreement.
We're going to bring Green Party vice presidential nominee Ajamu Baraka into this discussion. If you can respond to Governor Pence and Senator Kaine.
Well, I think that we are seeing a dramatic example of why the people of this country dislike and distrust both of these major candidates and their vice presidential running mates. We have this silly bickering as opposed to getting to the real issues to debate for the American people. There's a reason why they are both distrusted, because I think that the American people understand that both represent the politics of the establishment, the status quo, that the American people are very distrustful of. They see that, in fact, the Middle East has spun out of control. We see that Hillary Clinton led the attacks on a number of countries, including Libya, led the justification for destabilizing Syria. They see that Donald Trump has his bombastic rhetoric regarding carpet bombing in the Middle East and attacking this nation and that nation. And they are sick of it. Many people in this country are prepared to support a peace candidate. And the only peace candidate, the only peace ticket in this race is, in fact, the Green Party. So this kind of bickering and this kinds of personal attacks, as opposed to having a serious conversation about the critical issues that face this country, issues of war and peace, is a perfect example of why more and more people are looking beyond these two parties and looking for a real alternative. And the only alternative we have right now is, in fact, the Green Party and the Stein-Baraka ticket.
So let's go back to debate moderator Elaine Quijano of CBS News.
troops back in Iraq.
There are a lot of people wondering in this country about the economy. Right. Let's turn to the issue of the economy. According to the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, neither of your economic plans will reduce the growing $19 trillion gross national debt. In fact, your plans would add even more to it. Both of you were governors who balanced state budgets. Are you concerned that adding more to the debt could be disastrous for the country? Governor Pence.
I think the fact that under this past administration, of which Hillary Clinton was a part, we've almost doubled the national debt, is atrocious. I mean, I'm very proud of the fact that I come from a state that works. The state of Indiana has balanced budgets. We cut taxes. We made record investments in education and in infrastructure. And I still finished my term with $2 billion in the bank. That's a little bit different than when Senator Kaine was governor here in Virginia. He actually tried to raise taxes by about $4 billion. He left his state about $2 billion in the hole. The state of Indiana, we've cut unemployment in half, unemployment doubled when he was governor. But I think he's a very fitting running mate for Hillary Clinton. Because in the wake of a season where American families are struggling in this economy, under the weight of higher taxes and Obamacare and the war on coal and the stifling avalanche of regulation coming out of this administration, Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine want more of the same. It really is remarkable that they actually are advocating $1 trillion in tax increases, which I get that. You tried to raise taxes here in Virginia and were unsuccessful. But $1 trillion in tax increases, more regulation, more of the same war on coal, and more of Obamacare that now even former President Bill Clinton calls Obamacare a crazy plan. But Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine want to build on Obamacare. They want to expand it into a single-payer program. And for all the world, Hillary Clinton just thinks Obamacare is a good start. Look, Donald Trump and I have a plan to get this economy moving again, just the way that it worked in the 1980s, just the way it worked in the 1960s. And that is by lowering taxes across the board for working families, small businesses, and family farms, ending the war on coal. It is hurting jobs and hurting this economy, even here in Virginia. Repealing Obamacare, lock, stock, and barrel, and repealing all of the executive orders that Barack Obama has signed that are stifling economic growth in this economy. We can get America moving again, put on top of that the kind of trade deals that'll put the American worker first, and you've got a prescription for real growth. And when you get the economy growing, Elaine, that's when you can deal with the national debt. When we get back to 3.5 to 4% growth with Donald Trump's plan, we'll do. Then we're going to have the resources to meet our nation's needs at home and abroad, and we're going to have the ability to bring down the national debt.
Senator Kaine.
Elaine, on the economy, there's a fundamental choice for the American electorate. Do you want a year hired president in Hillary Clinton, or do you want a year fired president in Donald Trump? I think that's not such a hard choice. Hillary and I have a plan that's on the table that's a year hired plan. Five components. First thing we do is we invest in manufacturing infrastructure and research in the clean energy jobs of tomorrow. Second thing is we invest in our workforce, from pre-K education to great teachers to debt-free college and tuition-free college for families that make less than $125,000 a year. Third, we promote fairness by raising the minimum wage so you can't work full-time and be under the poverty level, and by paying women equal pay for equal work. Fourth, we promote small business growth, just as we've done in Virginia. To make it easier to start and grow small businesses, Hillary and I each grew up in small business families. My dad, who ran an ironworking and welding shop, is here tonight. And fifth, we have a tax plan that targets tax relief to middle-class individuals and small businesses and asks those at the very top who've benefited as we've come out of recession to pay more. The Trump plan is a different plan. It's a you're fired plan, and there's two key elements to it. First, Donald Trump said wages are too high. And both Donald Trump and Mike Pence think we ought to eliminate the federal minimum wage. Mike Pence, when he was in Congress, voted against raising the minimum wage above $5.15. And he has been a one-man bulwark against minimum wage increases in Indiana. The second component of the plan is massive tax breaks for the very top. Trillions of dollars of tax breaks for people just like Donald Trump. The problem with this, Elaine, is that's exactly what we did 10 years ago, and it put the economy into the deepest recession since the 1930s. Independent analysts say the Clinton plan would grow the economy by 10.5 million jobs. The Trump plan would cost 3.5 million jobs. And Donald Trump, why would he do this? because his tax plan basically helps him. And if he ever met his promise and he gave his tax returns to the American public like he said he would, we would see just how much his economic plan is really a Trump-first plan.
On that, Ajaa Mubaraka, you're the vice presidential candidate of the Green Party. Talk about your and your running mate, Jill Stein's, plans for the economy.
Well, we believe that in order to have a just economy, we have to have an economy that's also committed to racial justice. We believe that we have to have an economy in which there is a basic support for human rights in all of their manifestations. So we say that we have to have an economy in which a right to a job is, in fact, a human right, that people have a right to health care, that we have a right to an educational experience that will result in the full development of the human personality and our human faculties. We believe that we have to have a right to a clean environment. We believe that we have to have a dignified lifestyle, a dignified life that is informed by the ability to live with dignity by having an adequate income. Everybody should have a guaranteed income here in this country. So we support a raise in the minimum wage. We are committed to transforming this economy away from its dependence on fossil fuels, and we are committed to a clean energy program where we're going to produce 20 million jobs in the clean energy sector. And we believe we can do this by 2030. So we have a job, we have a program to put people back to work, to transform the economy, to have a minimum of support, a network for people who need it. We are prepared to provide federal funds to support the creation of co-ops. We have a plan that we believe will provide dignity, self-respect, and independence for people. But we understand that we have to fight for this because we see and we know that both parties are committed to the same kind of trickle-down economics, the same commitment to neoliberal globalization that has created the kinds of economic contradictions we see in the society today.
Let's go back to debate moderator Elaine Quijano of CBS News.
Point. Governor Pence, recently the New York Times released part of Mr. Trump's 1995 tax return and reported that he could have avoided paying federal income taxes for years. Yesterday, Mr. Trump said he brilliantly used the laws to pay as little tax as legally possible. Does that seem fair to you?
Well, first, let me say I appreciated the you're hired, you're fired thing. Senator, you used that a whole lot, and I think your running mate used a lot of pre-done lines. Look, what you all just heard out there is more taxes, $2 trillion in more spending, more deficits, more debt, more government. And if you think that's all working, then you look at the other side of the table. I mean, the truth of the matter is the policies of this administration, which Hillary Clinton and Senator King want to continue, have run this economy into a ditch. We're in the slowest economic recovery since the Great Depression.
There are millions
more people living in poverty today than the day that Barack Obama, with Hillary Clinton at his side,
and the poverty
stepped
level
into the Oval
and the median
Office.
Income improved dramatically between 2014 and 2015.
Honestly, Senator, you can roll out the numbers and the sunny side, but I got to tell you, people in Scranton, no different. People in Fort Wayne, Indiana, no different. I mean, this economy is struggling. And the answer to this economy is not more taxes.
But it's not it's to not give away tax relief
spending.
To the folks at the top.
And so I
am interested
Governor,
to hearing whether he'll defend his running mates not releasing taxes
yeah,
and not paying taxes.
Absolutely, I will.
Governor,
Elaine,
with all due respect, the question was about whether it seems fair to you that Mr. Trump said he brilliantly used the laws to pay as little tax as legally possible.
Well, this is probably the difference between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and Senator Kaine. I mean, Hillary Clinton and Senator Kaine, and God bless you for it, career public servants, that's great. Donald Trump is a businessman, not a career politician. He actually built a business. Those tax returns that came out publicly this week showed that he faced some pretty tough times 20 years ago. But like virtually every other business, including the New York Times not too long ago, he used what's called net operating loss. We have a tax code, Senator, that actually is designed to encourage entrepreneurship.
But why won't
country.
He release his tax return?
Well, we're answering the question about the business thing. His tax return that showed he went through a very difficult time, but he used the tax code just the way it's supposed to be used, and he did it brilliantly.
How do you know
he
that? You haven't seen
a
his
runway
tax return.
Because he's created a business that's worth billions of dollars today.
How do you know that?
And with regard to paying taxes, this whole riff about not paying taxes and people saying he didn't pay taxes for years, Donald Trump has created tens of thousands of jobs, and he's paid payroll taxes, sales taxes,
Senator, I'm going to give you about 30 seconds to respond, and I have a question on Social Security.
Hillary Clinton is going to raise taxes, and Donald Trump and I are going to cut them.
Donald Trump started this campaign in 2014. He said, if I run for president, I will absolutely release my taxes. He's broken his first promise. Second, he stood on the stage last week, and when Hillary said you haven't been paying taxes, he said, that makes me smart. So it's smart not to pay for our military. It's smart not to pay for veterans. It's smart not to pay for teachers. And I guess all of us who do pay for those things, I guess we're stupid. And the last thing I'll say,
Senator,
is this.
Do you take all the deductions that you're entitled to?
The last thing I want to ask Governor Pence is
I do.
Governor Pence had to give Donald Trump his tax returns to show he was qualified to be vice president. Donald Trump must give the American public his tax returns to show that he's qualified to be president, and he's breaking his promise.
Elaine, I have to respond to this.
You get
I'll be very respectful.
Governor.
Look, Donald Trump has filed over 100 pages of financial disclosure, which is what the law requires.
But he said he would release his tax
returns.
The
American people can review that, and he's going, Senator,
all right,
he's going to release his tax returns.
I need to ask you about
the audit
Social Security.
Is over.
Richard Nixon released tax returns when
they're
he was under audit.
They're going to raise your taxes.
Gentlemen,
if you can't meet the Nixon standard,
the people at home cannot understand either one of you when you speak over each other. I would please ask you to wait until it is that the other is finished.
All right.
Green Party vice presidential nominee Ajamu Barak. Baraka, your response.
Look, on the issue of taxes, I'm more concerned about the fact that we have a number of corporations, multinational corporations based in the U.S., that historically don't pay any taxes. So we have an issue with individuals, rich individuals who are able to avoid taxes, but we also have these multinational corporations based in the U.S. That are avoiding taxes to the tune of $717 billion. You know, there's a different code for the rich and one for the rest of us. And what we have to do is to eliminate that contradiction. So the real issue is not just the fact that Donald Trump took advantage of the tax laws. The real issue is that those tax laws exist. So we're going to have a fair economy. We're going to have fairness in this economy. We have to eliminate those kinds of loopholes. And we are prepared to, in fact, do that. It's a shame that we have corporations that make billions of dollars, but yet are able to avoid paying any tax here in this country.
Let's go back to debate moderator Elaine Quijano.
All right,
Senator,
we're having fun up here.
On the issue of Social Security, in 18 years, when the Social Security trust funds run out of money, you'll be 76. The Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget estimates your benefits could be cut by as much as $7,500 per year. What would your administration do to prevent this cut?
First, we're going to protect Social Security, which was one of the greatest programs that the American government has ever done. It happened at a time when you would work your whole life, raising your kids, working, being a little league coach or a Sunday school teacher, and then you would retire into poverty. And Social Security has enabled people to retire with dignity and overwhelmingly not be in poverty. We have to keep it solvent, and we will keep it solvent. And we'll look for strategies like adjusting the payroll tax cap upward in order to do that. Here's what Hillary and I will not do, and I want to make this very plain. We will never, ever engage in a risky scheme to privatize Social Security. Donald Trump wrote a book, and he said Social Security is a Ponzi scheme, and privatization would be good for all of us. And when Congressman Pence was in Congress, he was the chief cheerleader for the privatization of Social Security. Even after President Bush stopped pushing for it, Congressman Pence kept pushing for it. We're going to stand up against efforts to privatize Social Security, and we'll look for ways to keep it solvent going forward, focusing primarily on the payroll tax cap.
Governor Pence, I'll give you an opportunity to respond.
Well, thanks, Elaine. There they go again. Okay. All Donald Trump and I have said about Social Security is we're going to meet our obligations to our seniors. That's it.
Go read the book.
We've said we're going to meet the obligations of Medicare. That's what this campaign is really about, Senator. And I get this is the old scare tactic that they roll out.
But you have a voting record, Governor.
And I get all of that. I just look. There's a question that you asked a little bit earlier.
I can't believe that you won't defend your own voting record.
I have to go back to. You're running with Hillary Clinton, who wants to raise taxes by $1 trillion, increase spending by $2 trillion. And you say you're going to keep the promises of Social Security. Donald Trump and I are going to cut taxes.
You're going to raise taxes
so
on the middle class.
So we can meet the obligations of Social Security and Medicare.
All right.
If we stay on the path that your party has us on, we're going to be in a mountain range of debt, and we're going to face hard choices.
Gentlemen, I want to move on now.
You did ask us a question about debt, and the debt explosion on the Trump plan is much, much bigger than anything on the Clinton side.
All right, let me move on.
Green Party Vice Presidential nominee Ajamu Baraka on this issue of Social Security.
Well, on the issue of Social Security, it is quite clear that both the Republicans and the Democrats inspire a bit of distrust. We know that, for example, that the Obama administration was considering and at one point was pushing for Social Security cuts. And we know that the Republicans have always considered privatizing Social Security. This is a program that the American people have benefited from. It came out of the struggles of the 1930s. It's a program that we have to continue to struggle for, because it is something that has, in fact, benefited folks once they were able to, in fact, retire. The problem we have now is that it should be expanded. And so we need to hear more about how we expand Social Security, both for folks who are elderly, but we need to have a program, an economic program, that provides real Social Security for us throughout our entire lifetime. So we want a program that takes away the anxiety, takes away the fear of living in a society in which competition and insecurity is built into the fabric of this economy. We want to have a new kind of society in which everyone can be secure in their existence. So we support efforts to expand the notion, the idea of Social Security. And we definitely say that if you want to protect that program, demand that the government stops borrowing from the Social Security Trust Fund to mask the federal deficit. So we need to struggle. We need to be aware of what's happening with this program and be prepared to defend it.
Let's go back to Elaine Quijano of CBS News.
To the issue of law enforcement and race relations, law enforcement and race relations. After the Dallas police shooting, police chief David Brown said, quote, "We're asking cops to do too much in this country. Every societal failure, we put it off on the cops to solve. Not enough mental health funding, not enough drug addiction funding. Schools fail. Let's give it to the cops." Do we ask too much of police officers in this country? And how would you specifically address the chief's concerns, Senator Kaine?
Elaine, I think that's a very fair comment. I think we put a lot on police shoulders. And this is something I got a lot of scar tissue and experience on. I was a city councilman and mayor in Richmond. And when I came in, we had one of the highest homicide rates in the United States. We fought very, very hard over the course of my time in local office with our police department, and we reduced our homicide rate nearly in half. And then when I was governor of Virginia, we worked hard, too. And we did something we had really wanted to do. For the first time ever, we cracked the top 10 safest states because we worked together. Here's what I learned as a mayor and a governor. The way you make communities safer and the way you make police safer is through community policing. You build the bonds between the community and the police force, build bonds of understanding. And then when people feel comfortable in their communities, that gap between the police and the communities they serve narrows. And when that gap narrows, it's safer the communities and it's safer for the police. That model still works across our country, but there are some other models that don't work. An overly aggressive, more militarized model. Donald Trump recently said we need to do more stop and frisk around the country. That would be a big mistake because it polarizes the relationship between the police and the community. So here's what we'll do. We'll focus on community policing. We will focus on, and Hillary Clinton has rolled out a really comprehensive mental health reform package that she worked on with law enforcement professionals. And we will also fight the scourge of gun violence in the United States. I'm a gun owner. I'm a strong Second Amendment supporter. But I got a lot of scar tissue because when I was governor of Virginia, there was a horrible shooting at Virginia Tech. And we learned that through that painful situation, that gaps in the background record check system should have been closed, and it could have prevented that crime. And so we're going to work to do things like close background record checks. And if we do, we won't have the tragedies that we did. One of those killed at Virginia Tech was a guy named Liviu Librescu. He was a 70-plus-year-old Romanian Holocaust survivor. He'd survived the Holocaust. Then he survived the Soviet Union takeover of his country. But then he was a visiting professor at Virginia Tech, and he couldn't survive the scourge of gun violence. We can support the Second Amendment and do things like background record checks and make us safer, and that'll make police safer, too.
Governor Pence.
You know, my uncle was a cop, a career cop, on the beat in downtown Chicago. He was my hero when I was growing up. When we go up to visit my dad's family in Chicago, my three brothers and I would marvel at my uncle when he would come out in his uniform, sidearm at his side. Police officers are the best of us. I mean, men and women, white, African-American, Asian, Latino, Hispanic, they put their lives on the line every single day. And let me say, at the risk of agreeing with you, community policing is a great idea. Mm-hmm. It's worked in the Hoosier State. And we fully support that. Donald Trump and I are going to make sure that law enforcement have the resources and the tools to be able to really restore law and order to the cities and communities of this nation. It's probably why the 330,000 members of the Fraternal Order of Police endorsed Donald Trump as the next president of the United States of America, because they see his commitment to them. They see his commitment to law and order. But they also hear the bad mouthing that comes from people that seize upon tragedy in the wake of police action shootings as a reason to use a broad brush to accuse law enforcement of implicit bias or institutional racism, and that really has got to stop. I mean, when an African American police officer in Charlotte named Brentley Vinson, an all-star football player who went to Liberty University here in the state, came home, followed his dad into law enforcement, joined the force in Charlotte in 2014, was involved in a police action shooting that claimed the life of Keith Lamont Scott. It was a tragedy. I mean, we mourn with those who mourn. We grieve with those who grieve. We're saddened at the loss of life. But Hillary Clinton actually referred to that moment as an example of implicit bias in the police force, where she used, when she was asked in the debate a week ago whether there was implicit bias in law enforcement, her only answer was that there's implicit bias in everyone in the United States.
I just think
what we ought to do is we ought to stop seizing on these moments of tragedy. We ought to assure the public that we'll have a full and complete and transparent investigation whenever there's a loss of life because of police action. But Senator, please, you know, enough of this seeking every opportunity to demean law enforcement broadly by making the accusation of implicit bias every time tragedy occurs.
Elaine, people shouldn't be afraid to bring up issues of bias in law enforcement. And if you're afraid to have if you're afraid to have the discussion, you'll never solve it. And so here's an example, heartbreaking. We would agree this is a heartbreaking example. The guy Philando Castile, who was killed in St. Paul. He was a worker, a valued worker in a local school. And he was killed for no apparent reason in an incident that will be discussed and will be investigated. But when folks went and explored this situation, what they found is that Philando Castile, who was they called him Mr. Rogers with dreadlocks in the school that he worked, the kids loved him, that he had been stopped by police 40 or 50 times before that fatal incident. And if you look at sentencing in this country, African Americans and Latinos get sentenced for the same crimes at very different rates.
We need criminal justice reform. Indiana has passed criminal justice reform.
But I just want to say, those who say we should not be able to bring up and talk about bias in the system,
Senator,
will never
When an African-American police officer is involved in a police action shooting involving an African-American, why would Hillary Clinton accuse that African-American police officer of implicit
bias? I guess I can't believe you are defending the position that there is no bias and it's a topic
we don't need to talk about. Governor Pence, I have a question on that point.
I did not make that statement.
Ajamu Baraka, vice presidential nominee for the Green Party, if you can join in this discussion around the issue of criminal justice reform.
Well, you know, Amy, we have the unique experience of watching over the last couple of years, right before our eyes, a series of executions on the part of the police. We have watched Eric Garner being choked to death while he cried that he could not breathe. We have seen shootings where the police have surrounded an individual and then decided that, for whatever reason, that they felt threatened and would open fire. Our eyes are not lying. What we see is real. And what we have concluded is that the police appear to be waging war on our communities. So what we have here is not of the implicit bias or some abstract conversation, but we have, in fact, a structural relationship. We have a police force that is the front line in upholding the interests, the privileges of the 1%. They are there to protect and to serve not the people in our communities, but, in fact, that elite. So when we talk about police violence, when we talk about the fact that we have these individuals who are engaged in these activities, we were asked the question to Mike Pence that if the police are the best we have, then you would think that the representatives of the police, the representatives of their unions, would be the first ones to speak out when you have these obvious situations where you have a police misconduct. But yet, instead, they are either silent or they are in support. So what we have here is impunity. Impunity on the part of these police on the local level and impunity on the part of the federal government, that in the midst of this rash of killings, the federal government under Barack Obama has only saw fit to prosecute one of these killer cops. So what happens when we have this kind of impunity? We have resistance. And people are going to continue to resist. So if we can't have a conversation around why we have this kind of situation in this country, then I guess people have to be prepared for the inevitable consequence. People are not going to allow themselves to have war waged against them without resistance. Resistance is, in fact, a human right. So when the state is serious about attempting to address this issue, then I think it will. But community policing is not the solution. The solution is transforming that relationship. And unfortunately, that relationship will not be transformed until we transform this entire society, because the police are the front line in protecting privilege here in this country.
We're going back to debate moderator Elaine Quijano of CBS News.
Statement.
Your fellow Republican, Governor Pence, Senator Tim Scott, who is African-American, recently spoke on the Senate floor. He said he was stopped 7 times by law enforcement in 1 year.
A U.S.
He
senator.
Said, I have felt the anger, the frustration, the sadness and the humiliation that comes with feeling like you're being targeted for nothing more than being just yourself. What would you say to Senator Scott about his experiences?
Well, I have the deepest respect for Senator Scott, and he's a close friend. And what I would say is that we need to adopt criminal justice reform nationally. I signed criminal justice reform in the state of Indiana, Senator, and we're very proud of it. I worked when I was in Congress on the Second Chance Act. We have got to do a better job recognizing and correcting the errors in the system that do reflect an institutional bias in criminal justice. But what Donald Trump and I are saying is, let's not have the reflex of assuming the worst of men and women in law enforcement. We truly do believe that law enforcement is not
Elaine,
a force for racism
so
or division in
Senator
our country.
Scott, Governor?
Law enforcement in this country is a force for good. They truly are people that put their lives on the line every single day. But I would suggest to you, what we need to do is assert a stronger leadership at the national level to support law enforcement. You just heard Senator Kaine reject a stop and frisk. Well, I would suggest to you that the families that live in our inner cities that are besieged by crime...
Elaine, let Governor, me, the question is about Senator Scott.
What would you tell and Senator
Elaine,
Scott?
If I could jump, but I've heard Senator Scott make that eloquent plea. And look, criminal justice is about respecting the law and being respected by the law. So there is a fundamental respect issue here. And I just want to talk about the tone that's set from the top. Donald Trump during this campaign has called Mexicans rapists and criminals. He's called women slobs, pigs, dogs, disgusting. I don't like saying that in front of my wife and my mother. He attacked an Indiana-born federal judge and said he was unqualified to hear a federal lawsuit because his parents were Mexican. He went after John McCain, a POW, and said he wasn't a hero because he'd been captured. He said African Americans are living in hell. And he perpetrated this outrageous and bigoted lie that President Obama is not a U.S. citizen. If you want to have a society where people are respected and respect laws, you can't have somebody at the top who demeans every group that he talks about. And I just, again, I cannot believe that Governor Pence will defend the insult-driven campaign that Donald Trump has run.
Green Party Vice Presidential nominee Ajamu Baraka, what would you respond to South Carolina Senator Tim Scott, African-American, who spoke about being stopped by police numerous times?
That he represents a lived reality in this country, that it is what we spoke about a moment ago, that in this country, if you are an African-American, and in particular African-American male, but now also a African-American woman, you are subjected to this kind of harassment, this kind of dehumanization. It is part of what we see with the increased aggressive policing in our communities. And why has that occurred? Well, one reason we believe is because what we have now is an aggression that is a reflection of the fact that our communities are seen as a surplus population. A surplus community, that right now, because black labor is no longer needed in this new economy, we find that we have become a social problem. And we see the consequence of that with mass incarceration, with this aggressive policing, with these with the war being waged against our communities and against Latinos and against Native people. So, you know, that is the reality that we are facing. And it's a reality that we've got to resist. It is a systematic violation of our fundamental human rights. And every people on this planet have a right to resist any encroachment, any violation of their human rights. And that is something that we are prepared to support. We stand in solidarity with people who are in resistance to the systematic oppression. And it's part of what we are doing with this campaign in terms of connecting up with that resistance movement and hoping that we can expand that movement to a powerful force here in this country.
Let's go back to debate moderator Elaine Quijano.
All right, I want to turn to our next segment now, immigration. Your running mates have both said that undocumented immigrants who have committed violent crimes should be deported. What would you tell the millions of undocumented immigrants who have not committed violent crimes? Governor Pence.
Donald Trump's laid out a plan to end illegal immigration once and for all in this country. We've been talking it to death for 20 years. Hillary Clinton and Tim Kaine want to continue the policies of open borders, amnesty, catch and release, sanctuary cities, all the things that are driving driving wages down in this country, Senator. And also, too often, with criminal aliens in the country, it's bringing heartbreak. But Donald Trump has a plan that he laid out in Arizona that will deal systematically with illegal immigration, beginning with border security, internal enforcement. It's probably why, for the first time in the history of Immigration and Customs Enforcement, their union actually endorsed Donald Trump as the next president of the United States, because they know they need help to enforce the laws of this country. And Donald Trump has laid out a priority to remove criminal aliens, remove people that have overstayed their visas. And once we have accomplished all of that, which will strengthen our economy, strengthen the rule of law in the country, and make our community safer once the criminal aliens are out, then we'll deal with those that remain. But I have to tell you, I was listening to the avalanche of insults coming out of Senator Kaine a minute ago.
These were Donald.
He says,
hold on a second.
It's my
Governor.
Time, Senator.
It is, in fact, the governor's time.
I apologize. This is your 2 minutes.
Thanks. I forgive you. He says ours is an insult-driven campaign. Did you all just hear that? Ours is an insult-driven campaign. I mean, to be honest with you, if Donald Trump had said all the things that you said he said in the way you said he said them, he still wouldn't have a fraction of the insults that Hillary Clinton leveled when she said that half of our supporters were a basket of deplorables. She said they were irredeemable. They were not America. I mean, it's extraordinary. And then she laid one after another ism on millions of Americans who believe that we can have a stronger America at home and abroad, who believe we can get this economy moving again, who believe that we can end illegal immigration once and for all. So, Senator, insult-driven campaign. I mean, that's small potatoes compared to Hillary Clinton calling half of Donald Trump's supporters a basket of deplorables.
Hillary Clinton said something on the campaign trail, and the very next day she said, you know what, I shouldn't have said that.
She said she shouldn't have said half.
Governor, this is Senator Kaine's 2 minutes, please.
Yeah, that's right. So now we're even.
Yeah.
look for Donald Trump apologizing to John McCain for saying he wasn't a hero. Donald Trump apologize for calling women slobs, pigs, dogs, disgusting?
Did
Donald Trump apologize for taking after somebody in a Twitter war and making fun of her weight? Did he apologize for saying African Americans are living in hell? Did he apologize for saying President Obama was not even a citizen of the United States? You will look in vain to see Donald Trump ever taking responsibility for anybody and apologizing. Immigration. There's two plans on the table. Hillary and I believe in comprehensive immigration reform. Donald Trump believes in deportation nation. You got to pick your choice. Hillary and I want a bipartisan reform that will put keeping families together as the top goal. Second, that will help focus enforcement efforts on those who are violent. Third, that will do more border control. And fourth, that will provide a path to citizenship for those who work hard, pay taxes, play by the rules, and take criminal background record checks. That's our proposal. Donald Trump proposes to deport 16 million people, 11 million who are here without documents, and both Donald Trump and Mike Pence want to get rid of birthright citizenship. So if you're born here, but your parents don't have documents, they want to eliminate that. That's another 4.5 million people. These guys, and Donald Trump has said it, deportation force. They want to go house to house, school to school, business to business, and kick out 16 million people. And I cannot believe that Governor Pence would sit here and defend his running mate's claim that we should create a deportation force so that they'll all be gone. So,
Senator, we have a deportation force. It's called Immigrations and Customs Enforcement. And the Union for Immigrations and Customs Enforcement, for the first time in their history, endorsed Donald Trump to be the next president of the United States.
So you like the 16 million deportation?
Senator, that's nonsense. What you just heard is they have a plan for open borders, amnesty.
Our plan is like Ronald Reagan's plan from 1986.
They call it comprehensive immigration reform on Capitol Hill. We all know the routine. It's amnesty. And you heard one of the last things he mentioned was border security. That's how Washington always plays it.
We voted for border security three years ago, and Governor Pence was against it.
Ronald Reagan said a nation without borders is not a nation. Donald Trump is committed to restoring the borders of this nation.
Green Party vice presidential nominee Ajamu Baraka, the Green Party's plan for immigration.
KGNU, Denver Boulder.
To the Democratic and Republican candidates.
Dr. Stein has laid out our plan, which is basically we support comprehensive immigration reform. But we also understand that we've got to address the issues that drive people to this country. And those issues are related to the relationship between the U.S. and these various countries in various parts of the world, in particular in Central and South America. If we have a fair trade, if we have a situation where countries are allowed to develop along their own lines, where they can develop their economy, then we won't have the push that we see that is occurring that's compelling people to have to come to or go to another country in order to survive. We see the consequence of NAFTA is devastating effects on the countryside in Mexico. And now we see the same kind of agreement being at the point of being approved with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So these kinds of trade issues, these kinds of economic issues are the driving force for immigration. We think that both parties can be criticized for their immigration or non-immigration policies. It is really sort of rich that the Democrats would talk about a deportation, where under the Obama administration we've had record deportations, and the consequence has been a reign of terror in various immigrant communities. The Obama administration has refused to respect the provisions of the covenant. The Convention on Migrant Rights that would give undocumented folks the ability to live a life out of the shadows, to have access to education and to health care. So both parties have played games with this immigration issue. And we believe that the only way we're going to be able to address this issue is, again, building a powerful movement that will force the politicians to have something that is really rooted in the real needs of people, to allow them to be legalized and allow them to organize themselves and allow them to be fully human. And that means we've got to struggle to achieve that.
Let's go back to Vice Presidential Debate Moderator Elaine Quijano.
So, Governor, how would these millions of undocumented immigrants leave? Would they be forcibly removed?
Well, I think Donald Trump laid out a series of priorities that doesn't end with border security. It begins with border security. And after we secure the border, not only build a wall, but beneath the ground and in the air, we do internal enforcement. But he said the focus has to be on criminal aliens. We just had a conversation about law enforcement. We just had a conversation about the violence that's besetting our cities. The reality is that there's heartbreak and tragedy that has struck American families because people that came into this country illegally are now involved in criminal enterprise and activity, and we don't have the resources or the will to deport them systematically. Donald Trump has said we're going to move those people out, people who've overstayed their visas. We're going to enforce the law of this country. We're going to strengthen immigrations and customs enforcements with more resources and more personnel to be able to do that. And then Donald Trump has made it clear, once we've done all of those things, that we're going to reform the immigration system that we have where people can come into this country. That's the order that you should do it. Border security, removing criminal aliens, upholding the law, and then, Senator, I'll work with you when you go back to the Senate. I promise you, we'll work with you to reform the immigration system.
I look forward to working together in whatever capacities we serve in, but I just want to make it very, very clear that he's trying to fuzz up what Donald Trump has said. When Donald Trump spoke in Phoenix, he looked the audience in the eye, and he said, no, we're building the wall, and we're deporting everybody. He said, quote, they will all be gone. They will all be gone. And this is one of these ones where you can just go to the tape on it and see what Donald Trump has said. And to add to it, we are a nation of immigrants. Mike Pence and I both are descended from immigrant families. Some things, you know, maybe weren't said so great about the Irish when they came, but we've done well by absorbing immigrants, and it's made our nation stronger. When Donald Trump says Mexicans are rapists and criminals, Mexican immigrants, when Donald Trump says about your judge, who's your judge? He said that Judge Curiel was unqualified to hear a case because his parents were Mexican. I can't imagine how you could defend that.
John Mubaraka, you have one more minute on immigration.
It's clear that we have to have a policy that allows for immigrants to have their humanity recognized. It is really a shame that the lives of these millions of people have become a political football in the discourse in this country. If there's going to be real justice in this country, we have to have a path to citizenship. That is our position from the Green Party and the Stein-Baraka campaign. And we believe that if we are elected, that will be one of the first orders of business. It is a shame that people are still living in the shadows. We think that this notion of a wall and this obsession with the border is a reflection of the kind of authoritarian mentality we have on both the left and also on the right. Well, on the right and the left. So we are prepared to really push forward with real comprehensive immigration reform that allows for people to live a decent life out of the shadows with their full humanity. That's our objective.
This is Democracy Now!'s live coverage of the vice presidential debate, the only one that will be held in this 2000 presidential season. And it's taking place at Longwood University in Farmville, Virginia. The Commission on Presidential Debates is running the debate at the university. It has only allowed in the Democratic and the Republican vice presidential candidates. Democracy Now! Has expanded the debate to break the sound barrier, inviting on the major party, third party candidates. We